Welcome to BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast series for board of directors and those charged with governance. Each episode features a topical discussion with board peers and subject matter experts on both trending and timeless boardroom issues, covering a myriad of issues, including, but not limited to, mitigating risk in the increasingly digital world, navigating your board career, from landing your first board seat to succession planning in support of the next generation, to other top-of-mind issues such as ESG reporting, shareholder activism, and the insights we share through the BDO Center for Corporate Governance and Financial Reporting. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome. I'm Amy Rojic, National Managing Principal of Corporate Governance and the leader of BDO's Center for Governance. And here with me today is Tom Bradbury to discuss culture within organizations, specifically how it is measured and what the board's role is. So Tom is a founder and CEO of BroadGauge, a managed services platform that measures culture and monitors its impact on the bottom line. He's a pioneer in providing human capital data that aligns leaders and quantifies the financial impact of culture on corporate performance. A career-long entrepreneur, Tom has founded multiple companies focused on workplace transformation and human capital. He is also the author of the book, The Culture Project, 30 Days to Reboot Your Organization. So, Tom, welcome to today's program.
Hi, Amy. Good afternoon. It's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Great. So let's just dive in here. So maybe we should just level set first and answer the question, what is culture and how do businesses address and measure it today?
We define culture. We think of culture as shared values and appropriate behaviors, acceptable and appropriate behaviors across an organization. And today, most companies are measuring that through employee engagement data, which I firmly believe is not a sufficient measure of culture. Culture is much more foundational. And that's what we're doing to disrupt, if you will, the way companies think about culture and measure it. And for us, a proxy for culture is measuring organizational effectiveness, because anywhere we detect ineffectiveness and measure that means that those shared values and appropriate behaviors are slacking in those areas. And that's what we would term unbalanced culture. So we really think of culture as what is acceptable behavior and shared values that allows people to be productive and engaged.
I love it. I love it. And I love that you said you're disrupting how we think about it. And maybe even more disrupting in the current environment where everyone is so focused on advancing technology. Maybe you can describe what you mean in your book about achieving an authentic tech-enabled culture.
A lot of times when I talk to some traditional HR experts and professionals, I'll get some pushback because we have four dimensions of culture. And they're prioritized in this order: leadership, organization, which is largely values and policies, the workforce, and one of our four dimensions is technology. And the reason why we make it a core component to what we're measuring, you know, I'm linking it back to that org effectiveness piece, right? Which is in today's world where people are distributed, where we're learning about new tools, tech tools that are coming out and having such a profound impact on what we do and how we do it, that if an organization is not being effective, right, you're then slowing your people down. They'll be less able to communicate and be productive as fluidly as they would like to. And anytime they need support or training, those are the things that we have to look at tech as an enabler of our culture, because that's how people stay engaged, are productive, and just help deliver positive outcomes. So if that's the reality, which it is, why isn't it a core component of culture? And we believe that it is.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, especially in today's world. So maybe we can move on to who and how is culture owned within an organization?
The CEO is responsible. They are the steward of the culture, and they have to establish a strategy to implement such a culture and maintain it. And there are many stakeholders in maintaining that culture down through the organization, the C-suite, operational executives, through managers at large. And all of those stakeholders need to be aligned in order to best understand those variety of needs across a workforce and continue to calibrate the company's approach to protecting and strengthening the culture of any given organization. And on top of that is the board, right? The boards of directors, you know, Amy, the gentleman that introduced you and I, Mark Pfister, has a great saying, noses in, fingers out, right? About the board's role. And we need to give them better data on how they provide the appropriate level of governance. So they're a stakeholder in this too. And that's how organizations should be thinking about culture today.
So maybe let's pick up on that a little bit. And I agree. I'm happy that Mark introduced us. So the board's role in culture, when you say that, it's more about, you know, how do you set a tone for an organization? But more importantly, how do you listen to the tone that's already there and ensure that that's the right way, the right behaviors to put it in your speak? That you're expecting out of the employees at large?
Yeah, first of all, right now, I think the boards are not receiving the sufficient data to be connected to an organization's culture, right? Because it's not only, culture is not only about how people feel, but more importantly, why they feel that way, right? Which maps back to the way we measure org effectiveness as a proxy for culture. And so we want to be able to give a board an understanding on how the company is executing on their strategy to protect and strengthen a culture that produces those shared values and appropriate behaviors and positive outcomes. So they need data that's relatable and understandable to them. And that's a challenge these days. And that's one of the things that we're pushing hard to change to help them have data that tells them whether CEOs and companies are delivering in and around culture, because people are so important. 35 years ago, I think the S&P 500 was 90% tangible assets, 10% intangible assets. Well, that's completely flipped, right? So a board's role in providing a layer of governance around any organization's assets, they have to keep in mind that the majority is intangible assets, i.e., IP, experience, knowledge, not only in an industry, but within any given company. So when people leave, which is a big, indicator of culture not really being, being protected or strengthened. When people leave, they're bringing those intangible assets somewhere else. So a board's role is really important in providing governance to help not only make sure that a CEO and their team are executing, but also helping them strategize on how they can execute better.
All right. So if we're no longer solely relying on employee engagement surveys and other things like that, what are the tools that BroadGauge pushes or promotes? I should say more politely.
Yeah. So no, that's okay. First of all, sentiment data is super, super important from any given business, because people will knock it from time to time about how people might feel given an event. But over time, the science of reading sentiment data is there, right? Where it illustrates trends. And so we do leverage sentiment data, although they're responding to our approach to survey, which is measuring for org effectiveness, right, as that proxy for culture. And more importantly, how we're relaying it back in a way that's more compliance-like or practical. So it would take me 90 seconds to explain how to read the data around sentiment and to anyone, whether it be a manager, an executive, or a board director, so that they can understand the data that they're looking at and what it's telling them. So along with that, there are also key financial indicators which will help illustrate the impact your current state culture is having on your bottom line. So there are these financial, human capital financial indicators such as human capital ROI, human capital value add, the cost of attrition when you factor in lost productivity. So throughout a year, when for clients on the BroadGauge platform, we're giving them updates quarterly. The default kind of engagement would be quarterly updates on those financial indicators based on their financial data. They're a pretty comprehensive attrition analysis, and every other quarter showing the sentiment data reflected back in those very relatable metrics and understandable metrics, so that organizations can understand where does unbalanced culture exist, map it back to the people that are responsible for those areas to take action and make investments, and watch how that effort is reflected in those financial indicators, which will help drive bottom line outcomes of a business.
And so the sentiment data that you're collecting, Tom, I guess maybe how is that being collected? How do you look at that? Is it in similar ways that we're obtaining, you know, employee thoughts on different things, or how does that work?
Based on those four dimensions of culture, leadership, organization, workforce, and technology, we create these very unique culture profiles that help us understand what's happening and where it's happening throughout any organization. So very similar mechanics to employee engagement. However, our North Star when we started BroadGauge was to be able to reflect back data that, again, I'll say it, is relatable and understandable to anyone in the organization. Where today, employee engagement is very much an operational exercise within HR. And a lot of that data tends to be very comprehensive. So it's not relatable to other domain leaders or executives or board directors. So when we kind of curated these metrics, we had it in our mind that we have to make sure in practical terms that people can understand what they have to address where. So, you know, simple, elegant, practical, compliance-like metrics was our goal. Some similarity in how we pose, we call them statements. We don't ask questions, we pose statements to get an understanding of organizational effectiveness or different aspects thereof. So it really helps deliver a model that not only can we baseline a culture, but we can really measure specific attributes, where we create approaches to measure collaboration or innovation or well-being or any attribute that's important to any given organization.
So I guess maybe we can switch gears a little, and we're talking a lot about the benefits of looking at culture, measuring culture. What are the risks associated with not doing anything when you find issues within your culture?
Well, there's a lot of firms who don't look, right? And then there's looking often enough. And organizational risk is a prominent issue, especially today, where there's challenges on, as I said before, that variety of needs across a workforce. And you can start with the remote hybrid in-office challenge, right? And that conversation. So if we don't have a strong foundational culture, if we're not delivering services, support, guidance, mission statements effectively, then people are going to be off balance. And when people are off balance, then that's when, you know, that, as we call it, unbalanced culture is detected. And that's when you're going to see higher rates of turnover, lower productivity, and people start to have a wandering eye for what else they could be doing somewhere else to find a place that better suits them. And it's not always straightforward, especially from today's, you know, where we talked about where we're disrupting, where we feel employee engagement data is insufficient. I have two cases right now where I'm talking to executives who run companies, and by all reports, they have very high employee engagement. But leaders and the board directors are very concerned about innovation and quality, right? So where I would argue that culture would include all of those things, the engagement data is very likely in both cases showing where people are happy / content working at a business, but there's not a lot of perhaps truth or trust in some of the areas that would allow things like innovation to flourish, right? Or collaboration in some instances.
So for example, take a PE firm, a portfolio company. Some of the things that we're getting from our clients in that space is, you know, what are standard practices that, for example, I'm in the governance area. So what are standard practices of the governance community?
Well, they're going to work with the data that is submitted to them, right? I've had, you know, along the way or ahead of every board meeting. So in and around human capital, most operating teams are leaning on their HR businesses or business partners, right? People who run that domain within any given portfolio company. So if you're one of the really large companies, private equity funds or firms, you're going to have support at the PE level, right? That helps guide each portco to deliver the right data at the right time. And they're doing some pretty sophisticated things in that area. Where I tend to focus is in and around the mid-cap space that don't always have access to these sophisticated resources. And so you have these middle market companies that have hired experts that are operationally expert and not necessarily in a position to deliver strategic data, right, to the operating teams and board directors. So we are a terrific partner where we can help businesses kind of get uniform data across all portfolio companies and help PE firms look at things more in aggregate, as well as down at the individual portco level. And that helps board directors and investors look at things that really are specific to what they will want to see. Things, you know, I think they're all looking at turnover in varying states of sophistication or complexity, I should say, but looking at metrics around what's actually happening within the organization using that sentiment data, looking at the financial impact alongside that attrition are really key components. And CalPERS, the big investment, the pension and benefit funds for all the California state employees, they're big investors, and the asset management fund Schroders put together a human capital framework that can be searched. And I'll send you a link to it. Perhaps you can include it in the notes of this episode, where it really validates both philosophy and mechanics of what Broadgage is doing, but it's detailing a recommended framework on how people should be leveraging the ability to quantify the impact of human capital through those metrics that I've mentioned, as well as different HR programs that are really important to execute on the data and watch the financial indicators react throughout the year. So again, those are the same types of things that we're doing as a managed service platform for businesses that don't always have access to the resources who can create those programs and provide that data. So I think it's really important that board directors at large think in those terms. And also in the private equity space, where you have investors and board directors around similar same things that should be getting the same data, you know, across a fund's assets and portfolio.
Thank you, Tom. And so maybe the last question I want to address today is, you know, thinking about what's happening in the regulatory environment for public entities and companies that do business with public entities. So what impact do you foresee from the SEC's evolving human capital disclosure requirements?
Yep. And so as you probably know, Amy, in 2020, the SEC established initially these 9 areas of human capital for publicly traded US-based companies to disclose. I think what you're alluding to is the human capital piece, which comes out after the climate piece, maps back to, I think it was the fall, where the SEC's Investment Advisory Committee made more specific recommendations on how we add more structure and rigidity around things like attrition. I don't believe we're going to get into, you know, the financial impact as mapped out in as an example, as mapped out in the CalPERS Schroeder's model, but definitely more structure and more breadcrumbs that on what to report and how to report it. And then, of course, best practices in general will be influenced by the evolving human capital disclosure requirements, and most specifically in areas, as we just mentioned, in private equity, but in regulated industry, because those same investors, you know, who are investing pension fund dollars and benefit dollars, they're investing in the public sector, and they understand the data that they want and they're starting to get, they're going to have those same expectations in places like private equity from these asset management, from these specific PE funds, and, you know, in aggregate and, you know, portco by portco, to understand how they're investing in the workforce and to understand a level of stability, getting back to how important those intangible assets are to most organizations.
Well, Tom, I really appreciate you joining us today, and I take all of your points to heart. We will be monitoring what comes out of the SEC for sure, but regardless of what additional disclosures the SEC may require, I think you've given us a lot of food for thought about tangible steps that companies should start be taking advantage of potentially. So I want to thank you for your time and look forward to engaging with our audience further on more from BDO in the Boardroom.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. Past episodes and related insights are available at bdo.com/BDO Boardroom. Or you can go to iTunes or Spotify to rate, review, and subscribe. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO. For more information on the BDO Center for Corporate Governance and Financial Reporting and the resources we provide, visit bdo.com/BDO knows governance.